Well, Mr. Chairman, members of council, friends and colleagues, I am very pleased to be here in beautiful Tampa at the Spring Depository Library Council meeting. Now, I was down in Tampa this past January. I was actually in St. Pete's Beach on some other business, and we flew in and out of Tampa, and so I made a little detour to the University of Tampa and the McDonald Kelsey Library. And I know Elizabeth Barron is here somewhere. Elizabeth, are you here? I saw you this morning. She's hiding, almost in the back row. And she's the depository coordinator at the McDonald Kelsey Library. And Marlon Peth, who I don't think is here this morning, she's actually covering the fact that Elizabeth is playing hooky at the library. Apparently this is a busy time for them. The students, or what are they, in finals or just about there? We had a great visit. And they shared a lot of time with me and some insights. And they also shared that they were pretty excited about having the DLC here. And I think as we saw with last night's reception, they have been very hospitable to us, and I think we owe them all a great thank you. So, Elizabeth, thank you. Now, I'm going to digress just a bit and perhaps go off script, which I know probably makes Rick and a few others out there nervous. But something interesting occurred, and that is GPO has a 2-year leadership development program, and its participants rotate through various locations throughout GPO, all of our different business units, and there's required coursework and classroom time, and of course, there is required reading. Now, I'm not involved in the curriculum, but I have read or am in the process of reading all of the required books. I thought I ought to know what we're teaching. And one of them is called What Everybody Is Saying, an ex-FBI agent's guide to speed reading people. Now imagine my surprise when I was reading the acknowledgments on, what is that, page 16. And it reads, others contributed in their own ways to this project, and I must recognize them individually. Now, this is Joe Navarro, the author. My dear friend, Elizabeth Lee Barron at the University of Tampa is a godsend when it comes to research. I thought that was pretty cool, and I think, you know, every now and then people actually do appreciate what all of you do each and every day in your jobs, and that's a good testament. Congratulations, Elizabeth. It actually is a pretty good book, by the way. Now, of course, I want to thank Rick Davis and his staff, wherever they are, for another great conference. And in particular, I'd like to thank those who are involved in the logistics. You know, we spend so much time on content, and most of these folks up here are dealing with the content piece of this conference. But these conferences don't go on without the logistics and everything that we have. And so I want to personally thank a few folks who were involved in logistics. Kathy Brozzi. Kathy, are you in here? Or are you working? Kathy. Lance Cummins. Lance.
He's by the door.
Lance is guarding the door. Nick and Yvonne Ellis. I see Yvonne. Where's Nick?
He's at the very back.
Nick Ellis. Bridget Govan. Bridget. She was behind the registration desk, right? Michelle Hawkins.
Not here.
Marion McGilvray.
Not here.
Not here. Debbie Smith. You guys have done a great job once again, and I think we all owe you a great thank you. Now, as I have been traveling the country, meeting with so many of you, one question keeps popping up, or at least has been popping up since January 20th. And that is, are you still the public printer, and for how long? Now, let me reassure you, I am Bob Tapella, and I am the public printer. Now, I did submit my letter of resignation to the president at the end of the Bush administration. However, it was not accepted. And I was retained by the Obama administration, although I'm not sure entirely for how long. Now, I've told the White House and Congress, if I have my choice, which I may or may not have, I would like to stay through March of 2011 so that I can be certain that many of the projects we've begun in the areas of technology investment, plant investment, and people investment are complete. What I did pledge to all of our senior managers and our union leadership is, one, that regardless of the timing, we will have a smooth transition. And number two, that I intend to work until my last day. And I think as you look at the agenda and some of the other things going on, you'll see that in this area, we are moving forward. Now, another question that is regularly asked is, in these uncertain economic times, how is the financial health of GPO? Well, let me take a minute or two and talk about our entire enterprise. As most of you know, GPO is the largest industrial manufacturer in the District of Columbia. In terms of printing companies and what we do in our factory, last year, GPO had plant revenue of approximately $159 million, plus another $300 million from the production of passports. Now, if we were a private enterprise ranked by Printing Impressions magazine, on their top 400 list, we would rank in the top 20 printers nationwide. And perhaps we're one of the largest print buyers too, as we purchased nearly $500 million worth of product from over 2,010 printers from around the country, printers in every state, plus Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Mariana Islands. Our size, however, does not make us immune to the economic storm facing everyone in this room. The demand for passports has dropped significantly. Last year, the Department of State required 24.5 million e-passports. This year, the demand is closer to 10.5 million. Now, GPO is financially healthy and thriving, but I won't kid you. Our budget is tight this year. We are, however, weathering this economic storm. And we're weathering it because we have incredible managers and employees who are dedicated to our mission. And we're not going to get something like money in the way of providing free, open, and permanent public access to the documents of our democracy. We're just going to be a little bit more creative this year. Now, tomorrow, Tuesday, you will have a full briefing on FDSIS. But I really want to congratulate Mike Wash and his team for launching FDSIS at the beginning of this year. Now, I know that there were at least a few of you who might have been a little skeptical about whether or not we'd actually launch FDSIS. Given GPO's track record in the not-too-distant past, and I know there's at least a few of you, I guess Tim was calling them the dinosaurs, that remember the infamous IPS. What was it? I think it stood for the Integrated Processing System, otherwise known as the $11 million sinkhole, until Judy Russell pulled the plug. And actually last night at the reception, Judy and I were kind of laughing about it. And just what a difference we have now at GPO. FDSIS was launched, it is live, and it has been an incredible success. Now on March 4th, which is GPO's birthday, we celebrated GPO's 148th birthday. We brought the entire FDSIS team up in front of the entire GPO family in Harding Hall, a room about this size. I was amazed at just how many people were involved in FDSIS. Standing side by side, multiple rows deep, they filled this entire stage area. Now, there's a few people from the FDSIS team here today in Tampa, And I'd like to publicly thank each one of them. Celine DeLucky. Where are you, Celine? Celine is our program director. You can keep standing, Celine. Is Blake Edwards here? No, oh, you're giving me bum advice there, Rick. Carrie Gibb. Carrie. And I'm guessing sitting in between the two of you is Lisa LaPlante. Lisa, come on. Thank you all. You did a terrific job. Now, on March 9th of this year, I sent a letter to President Obama. And I indicated that his initiative on transparency and open government was important to me and the men and women of the government printing office. I pledged our full support and indicated that we'd like to help him implement it. After all, we've been providing transparency since GPO was established in 1861, and it has been the intent of Congress since 1813, when the statutory antecedents to the FDLP were first enacted. Now, with the letter, I attached 5 goals for the President's review and, more importantly, accompanying actions that GPO is prepared to undertake to help him implement his initiative for transparency and open government. First, position GPO's federal digital system as the official repository for federal government publications. Second, enable and support Web 2.0 functionality through FDSIS to support public comments on pending legislation. Third, establish a demonstration project to apply Web 2.0 features to rulemaking documents. Fourth, participate in and lead efforts to standardize electronic publishing formats. And fifth, link the White House website to FDSIS for public searches of government documents. Now, although we've tried to widely disseminate the letter, if you haven't had a chance to read the details and the specific actions, we have copies available today. I also want you to know that Mike Wash and some of his folks have been working very closely with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, who is responsible for open government initiatives, and the letter was very warmly received. We also have a GPO detailee, James Smith, at the White House Office of Management and Budget, who, among other responsibilities, is working in the area of open architecture. It's hard to believe, but it is appropriations time once again. Now, I'd like to begin by thanking all of you who communicated to the House and Senate on last year's appropriation. Your help made a difference. Congress was quite generous, which is a tribute to the men and women of the GPO who every day work to keep America informed. Now, Rick in his talk is going to go into detail about the S&E appropriation and what we got, so I'll stay focused on the entire appropriation. The bill provides appropriations totaling $140,567,000 for GPO. Now, that is a 12.7% increase over the level of funding in the continuing resolution. This compares to an increase of 10.8% for the legislative branch overall in the bill. We did very well. Now, apart from providing for significant increases in funding for the GPO, the appropriations signal several important policy initiatives. First, it eliminates the shortfall in congressional printing, which was one of my key initiatives. We were funding that through our revolving fund, which meant that we had limited resources available for reinvestment in GPO. Second, and probably near and dear to your hearts, after an extended period of relatively flat funding for the S&E appropriation, it begins to fund several important projects that GPO will focus on this fiscal year for the Federal Depository Library Program. One, data storage. Two, outreach and online educational training. Three, modernization of item selection systems and other applications. And four, additional funding for cataloging in indexing. Now, our request for fiscal year 2010 will include funding to continue these and other projects. We also hope that as a takeaway from this conference, we will be able to build consensus on priorities for future funding requests. Now, more generically to GPO, the appropriation provides funding for the new roof. I think that's about $3 million. And approximately $995,000 for elevator renovation and repair, reducing the pressure on our revolving fund to pay for critically needed building repairs. It also provides $1 million in new funding for continued development of FD-SIS. Though modest in scope, the funding for FD-SIS represents the first time Congress has appropriated new funding for GPO's online information dissemination mission to the revolving fund. In the past, they've been very generous in allowing us to carry prior year funds forward for the purpose. First time for new funding. What takes it even a step further is that funding for FD-SIS was emphasized by the House Appropriations Committee in its press release on the bill when it said, and I quote, Government Printing Office, $141 million, including funds for a new digital system to preserve and provide access to U.S. government information. I think that is incredible. So thank you all who participated in helping us get that funding. I do appreciate it. Well, on Wednesday, I'm going back to the trough, as it were, and we have our House Appropriations hearing this coming Wednesday. This year, our total request, and you're getting a sneak peek of this, so don't go telling everyone until after Wednesday, our total request is $166,307,000, which will enable us to meet projected requirements for GPO's congressional printing and binding operations, as well as information dissemination during fiscal year 2010, provide investment funds for necessary information dissemination projects in the FDLP, to complete the development of FD-SIS and implement other improvements to GPO's information technology infrastructure, and, unfortunately, we still need it, perform essential maintenance and repairs on GPO's buildings. And I know at least one of you in this room was asked to testify on our behalf as well. And that's Mary Alice with the American Association of Law Libraries. So if you want to bend my ear, Rick's ear, or Mary Alice's ear between now and Wednesday, feel free to do so. Now moving on. As many of you know, during my travels as public printer, I've had the opportunity to visit a number of libraries around the country. Now, while I haven't gone out specifically to visit one library or another, as diverse as the job is of public printer, I'm on the road quite a bit, and I always try to fit in a visit or two with my other duties. Now, just last week, I was in Minneapolis at the University of Minnesota, Wilson Library, and Kirsten Clark, the depository coordinator, was my gracious host. Kirsten, are you here? I know you are. Kirsten, thank you. I've also visited Tulane University, the Howard Tilton Memorial Library. Now, no one from Howard Tilton is here. However, James Dugan. James, where are you? Ah, front row, right next to Mary Ellis. James is at the Law Library at Tulane. He also is the new president of AALL. Thank you, James. One of the interesting things at Tulane is I was able to see the recovery effort because unfortunately, like so many other depository libraries, it's in the basement, and it flooded during Katrina. And all of the books were brought out, and they have this process for bringing the books back in. And I was able to see that recovery process, and amazingly, while there was a lot of damage, the majority of the collection is coming back. And it was saved, I understand, because of the compact shelving. They were like bricks. And so the water, while it destroyed covers, didn't destroy content. And one of the little benefits that's coming out of the disaster is that they are now cataloging everything that's going back into the library. And I thought that was just incredible. Now, I also visited the Law Library of Louisiana while I was in New Orleans. And on a trip to Florida, I visited the Florida International University Green Library. I also have visited the University of Central Florida Main Library. And Rich Gauss, Rich, are you here? Rich is standing in the back. Hello, Rich. And of course, I mentioned I visited the University of Tampa, the McDonald Kelsey Library, and Elizabeth is in the back of the room. Why does it with the back of the room in you guys? Now, on a couple of trips to New York, I have visited both the New York Public Library and the Brooklyn Public Library. I made it out to the San Francisco Public Library, and Kathy was my gracious hostess. Thank you, Kathy. I also visited the Law Library of San Bernardino County, which won our Depository Library of the Year last year. Larry Meyer, I know you're here. Again, the back row. Within the past month or so, I visited the Philadelphia Free Library. And earlier this year, I visited the University of Illinois at Chicago, John Schuler's Library. Thank you, John. Goodness gracious, I guess this was last month, I visited the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library and the Indiana State Library. This past summer, I was at Cornell University, the John M. Olin Library. And near and dear to my heart, I happened to make it out to my alma mater, and that is the Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Robert E. Kennedy Library. So that's where I've been traveling so far. I have visited one other library, and that's a non-FDLP library. However, they are considering obtaining FDLP status, and that's the Naval Oceanographic Library in Stennis, Mississippi. As some of you probably know, we have a secure production facility on the John C. Stennis Space Center in Mississippi, and I was able to visit the Naval Library there. Now, the SUDOC staff, especially Robin Han Mohammed, who's passing notes in the corner, have done a great job arranging these visits and making certain that I'm visiting the full spectrum of different types, sizes, and kinds of libraries. One of these days, I will get to a tribal library, Carlene, though. I've also been learning a lot. Now, my main purpose in these visits is for me to learn about the issues facing the different types of libraries involved in the program. I will also admit that I always ask to see something unique at each library. Now, it doesn't always have to be in GovDocs, though, but it does need to be something that I couldn't just find anywhere. Now, with the incredible diversity of the libraries in the FDLP, you are a treasure trove of unique and incredible collections. And for me personally, it's actually a lot of fun. I think it's one of the perks that comes with the job. It may be the only perk that comes with this job. Now, I've got to see some really interesting things, such as a replica of Sherlock Holmes's study. A complete and absolutely gorgeous collection of the Code of Federal Regulations, including an original Title I. A cuneiform from the Bronze Age. A whole room dedicated to calligraphy, compliments of Kathy, and some incredible hand-bound artist books, which John showed to me. Now, I could spend hours talking about the fun side of this job, but I'll go back to the real purpose of these visits. It's very helpful for me to put things into context when Rick and his staff bring library issues to my attention. I can then ask perhaps more intelligent questions, such as how something might affect a particular library now that I've seen so many, as opposed to simply asking questions in the hypothetical. Now, I'm also seeing some trends, particularly in light of the economic situation we're all facing. Funding cuts Imagine that. Is there anyone in this room whose library is not facing funding cuts? Larry Meyer, Law Library of San Bernardino County, apparently the only library not facing funding cuts. Coupled with that, there seems to be a greater demand from patrons who are now unemployed and needing resources, particularly computers and internet access. And as I've been wandering around and visiting libraries, one of the things that was sort of interesting, I always ask, you know, what's one of the biggest problems you're facing? And what has amazed me, one of the things that keeps coming up is outlets to plug in laptop computers. You know, here I was expecting space issues or, you know, something. And it's juice because that's how patrons are using the libraries today. And for those that don't have laptops, it's the line, particularly computers and internet access. Now, what was interesting is when I went to visit the Brooklyn Public Library, they have a whole section of computers and you plug in your library card so you can get in the queue, and the librarian that took me around, and I'm going to actually get my name correctly, Danny Luce, was kind enough to take me around. And so we queued in, and sure enough, 48 minutes was the time, the wait time, and this was in the middle of an afternoon. It was like a Thursday afternoon or Tuesday afternoon. 48-minute wait was the anticipated wait to get onto one of the public access computers. And so we waited, and sure enough, at 48 minutes, bingo, our computer was ready. And what's also interesting is access to government publications such as the Employment Outlook book. And that's actually something people like in book form. They like flipping through the pages. And in more than one library, we have found copies of it in multiple locations. It's not just with GovDocs. It's in a career center and it's in the business section. And of course, unfortunately, other benefit type publications seem to be very, very important. And in fact, when we were in Indianapolis, they have a computer lab, and on Sundays, they dedicate a computer lab just for people who are applying for unemployment benefits. And apparently Sunday is the day, if you do it before 4 p.m., you can get your check on Monday or something to that effect. And so they have opened up new resources just to serve the patrons right now because of what the need is. Now, I'm also seeing firsthand how the different types of libraries are serving their patrons. And I can be honest, I have a much better understanding of what serving a patron really means. And guess what? It is different at every one of these libraries. Yet there's that common thread. Everyone was talking about how they serve their patrons. And, you know, that's really what this conference is set to focus upon. As you may recall, at the fall conference in Washington, D.C., I asked Tim to focus this conference in two areas. One, how the partnership between depositories and GPO can thrive. And two, how the relationship between the regionals and the selectives can be strengthened. And looking at the agenda, I believe council has this conference squarely on track, because at the end of the day, it's all about serving your patrons. Now, during this afternoon session, I want to stress that GPO wants to hear from council, library directors, librarians, and others in attendance so that we can develop actionable items with council. I want to reiterate that we're focusing attention as well on the priorities council and the library community have given to us already, continuing development of FDCIS and getting off of the waste, and the items that we received in budgetary funding for this year, in addition to fulfilling our statutory mandates associated with the program. I guess that's the disclaimer. There should have been an asterisk there, and it's in the fine print at the bottom of the page. But I want you to know that additional items from this conference will be factored into those existing priorities and other budgetary considerations. Now, I already know what GPO thinks about these issues. These folks are quite vocal. Okay? This is your opportunity to share with us. And I hope you will take that opportunity very seriously. Now, to conclude my remarks, I want to go broad again. And I'd like to switch topics to something that affects GPO and is near and dear to my heart. And that's the topic of sustainable environmental stewardship. Now, since I've been public printer, sustainable environmental stewardship has been a great focus of mine and the agency's. And it means more than just going green. It means being proactive and making changes so that GPO becomes a more efficient operation that makes better use of the resources under our control. Now, we articulated a vision for the entire life cycle of what GPO produces, from how we source the raw materials, to how we produce our products, to what happens to our products when our customers are done with them. For GPO, this means a variety of initiatives. From moving from web offset presses to digital equipment to reduce paper consumption. Accelerating the re-engineering of our business processes to take advantage of efficiencies offered by digital technology. Conducting energy audits throughout our facilities to reduce energy demand. Using more environmentally responsible paper. Reducing the total amount of waste generated by our operations. And to install a green roof on our building in targeted areas to double the life expectancy and reduce our heating and cooling demands in the future. Now, I have a video to share with you that accompanies our annual report, and it focuses on sustainable environmental stewardship as good business and good government. Let's roll the video.
Position in the world has been attained by the extent and thoroughness of the control we have achieved over nature. But we are more, not less, dependent upon what she furnishes than at any previous time of history.
Those words were spoken by President Theodore Roosevelt to a national conference on conservation at the White House in 1908. 100 years later, the public printer of the United States, Robert C. Tavella, looks to President Roosevelt's observation as a call to sustainable environmental stewardship at the U.S. Government Printing Office.
Sustainable environmental stewardship is not a partisan issue. It's good business and it's good government. It's also not a new idea. President Teddy Roosevelt was talking about it 100 years ago. What we're seeing at GPO is a need from our customers for sustainable products and services.
The employees at the Government Printing Office have been keeping America informed on the documents of its democracy since the presidency of Abraham Lincoln. They have been doing this from GPO headquarters on North Capitol Street in Washington, D.C. The facility is comprised of four buildings totaling 1.5 million square feet. GPO's plant is located on multiple floors, requiring numerous elevators for the transportation of the product. The buildings are too large and antiquated to meet the printing and digital needs of the 21st century. The public printer would like to move GPO into the first LEED Platinum printing plant in America. LEED is a voluntary green building rating system that provides measurable benchmarks for developing high performance and sustainable buildings.
Our buildings are from a bygone era. Our newest building is over 60 years old. Since we need a new factory, we need significantly less space. I believe that it is prudent to have the most environmentally sensitive building we could have.
GPO is working with Congress on a plan to relocate the facility, but in the meantime, the agency is taking steps to increase efficiencies. An immediate example is improving GPO's roof. This past year, GPO put on a new bio-based green roofing system on a small portion of the facility, and it's expected to double the life expectancy of the roof.
The bio-based application that we're applying to the top of our roof is a membrane of sorts, and it will reflect any light that comes down on it since it's white. Then inside our building, we're not absorbing the heat as we have in the past, so our heating and cooling demands throughout the year will be decreased.
Paper is another area where GPO is taking steps in helping the environment. Throughout the agency's history, recycling paper has been a top priority. GPO's plant prints the equivalent of nearly 3 billion standard letter-sized pages per year. In 2008, GPO recycled more than 5.6 million pounds of waste paper. That's equivalent to about 34,000 trees saved. GPO's baling room is the place where all waste paper throughout the facility comes.
The waste paper is compacted and baled. Bales weigh anywhere from 300 to 1,400 pounds.
Those bales are weighed automatically, sent down the conveyor belt, loaded into a truck, and sent to a vendor for recycling. GPO prints two daily newspapers, the Congressional Record and the Federal Register. These are produced on 40% post-consumer waste recycled newsprint. The GPO is moving toward using more environmentally responsible paper in our plant and for our agency customers.
The message that we're sending to our federal customers are that GPO is a leader and we want to be front runners in protecting the environment.
GPO has opened a dialogue with the paper industry. The public printer held a paper industry day in 2008 to listen and learn about paper sustainability from paper industry leaders. Also in 2008, GPO began testing 100% post-consumer waste recycled paper. The agency has seen positive results from these tests.
Manufacturers have gotten better now. They have the brightness, the color is white, so you're really seeing a good product.
GPO has taken a look at its equipment and has made great improvements towards sustainable environmental stewardship. Reducing hazardous materials and waste generation is a top priority for GPO. As part of this ongoing effort, the agency installed a solvent recovery system to improve operations and save the taxpayer money.
GPO has reduced its hazardous waste by 90% in this area. We no longer have to haul out that waste, but we're distilling it inside.
GPO employees have been working around the clock to produce the nation's passports for the State Department since the 1920s. In 2008, employees produced a record-breaking 24 million e-passports. 2008 marked another milestone in passport production. GPO opened a secure production facility on the grounds of Stennis Space Center in Mississippi. This operation ensures GPO continues to meet the demand by the American people and the State Department's request of a secure facility outside of Washington, D.C. During the construction of Stennis, GPO selected energy-efficient lights, glass, cooling and heating systems, and a solvent recovery system with a water evaporator.
Gutted a building, and we were literally able to start from scratch. And so we made certain that the processes we designed down there were as sustainable as possible given the product we're producing. In addition to what we did in building the factory, we also have put in place systems so that we can achieve higher efficiency with the resources we're using.
GPO works with the library community to provide free, open, and permanent public access to the documents of our democracy through the Federal Depository Library Program. GPO is working with the FDLP on ways to practice sustainable environmental stewardship. GPO is making resources and printed products available in electronic form only, which will save on paper and reduce waste. Digital itself is a key to sustainable environmental stewardship. GPO's Federal Digital System, or FDSIS, is an advanced system that will enable GPO to manage information from all three branches of the federal government. FDSIS gives the American people a one-stop site to authentic, published government information. While developing FDSIS, GPO purchased the most energy-efficient servers available, which resulted in energy savings. GPO has also made energy upgrades to servers that service the entire agency.
We're reducing energy by at least 40% on our servers in order to still achieve the performance levels that we need. And particularly with FDSIS, we have higher expectations of search performance to get accessibility to federal publications.
GPO tries to be green in every step of the printing process. GPO employees have been recycling scrap metal, aluminum, silver, copper, brass, 55-gallon metal drums, and corrugated boxes for much of the agency's 150-year history. The agency has conducted multiple energy audits to help identify areas GPO can increase efficiencies. GPO asks its employees to help be sustainable by instituting an incentive program called Goal Sharing. This year-round program gives all employees a monetary award for making a positive difference that helps GPO reduce costs and exceed revenue targets. This program gives all employees a chance to practice sustainable environmental stewardship.
GPO's employees are our greatest asset. For nearly 150 years, these dedicated men and women have been producing the documents of our democracy and making them available to the public. It is through their actions that we will attain sustainable environmental stewardship.
The men and women of GPO have made great strides in helping the environment, but are looking for more ways to be proactive. GPO is a model for showing how sustainable environmental stewardship is good business and good government.
So, that concludes my remarks.